Welcome to Planning Law with Chickens, an occasional podcast brought to you by Town Legal, the specialist planning law firm, a podcast in which we cover all things planning law and planning. I'm Meeta Kaur, I'm a partner at Town Legal, and today's episode is one of our case law summaries, a bite-sized summary of a particularly interesting case that's brought to you by a barrister that's actually been involved in the case. Today's case is C.G. Fry and the Secretary of State for Levelling Up Housing and Communities, which was an appeal from a decision of a planning inspector to refuse to discharge conditions on a planning permission because a habitats regulation assessment had not been undertaken. And to take us through that case, here is Nick Grant of Landmark Chambers, who acted for the Secretary of State.
Thanks very much, Meeta, for having me on the show. The first thing that I want to mention about Fry is the High Court judgment is almost certainly not the end of the line. Cranston has granted permission to appeal and he's granted a leapfrog certificate. I think both of those are in the public domain following Charlie Banner's LinkedIn posts. So it's now up to the Supreme Court whether they feel the need to consider it or whether they decide to send it back to the Court of Appeal. Either way, however, I imagine this is very much not where we're going to. This isn't the stopping point. I want to start by outlining the nutrient neutrality problem as it applies to the country, because that forms an important part of the background of this case. So the starting point is this. Under the habitats regulations, which were made to import the habitat directive into UK law, a number of sites are designated as special areas of conservation or special protection areas. The shorthand is SACs or SPAs. SACs and SPAs are protected unless a development can be screened out, i.e. a decision maker can be sure it won't have any effect. A local planning authority or the Secretary of State cannot grant consent, I use that term neutrally because it becomes important later, unless it is certain that doing so will have no adverse effect on site integrity. That usually requires what's called an appropriate assessment, and there's a whole range of case law about what that needs. Now, this case concerns a Ramsar site that isn't protected under the habitats regulations themselves, but it is designated under the Wildlife and Countryside Act. A national policy in the form of the NPPF says give Ramsar sites the same levels of protection as SACs and SPAs. The reason I draw that distinction partly is because it becomes important later, but also because it's important to note that the reason why something is designated as an SAC, the important bits of, you know, flower or bird life or whatever it is, won't necessarily be the same as the reason that something is designated under the Ramsar Convention, which is about wetlands. Now, a lot of these sites are suffering from too many phosphates. The scientific issue underlying this is basically an excess of phosphates comes into the water. That leads to far too much unpleasant green algae, and the nice bits of flora and fauna and whatever they're designated for tends to suffer. The technical term is eutrophication. The sources of this eutrophication are multivarious. Farming's a big one. New developments can contribute through things like their foul water discharge, i.e. their sewage, but they're not the biggest cause of this in any way, shape or form. That said, Natural England published an advice note in August 2020, and that basically said that whilst the Somerset Levels and Moors SAC was fine from a nutrient neutrality perspective, the Somerset Levels and Moors Ramsar site was not. And that advice note advised carrying out an appropriate assessment before granting any permission for housing in the area. Now, this national problem, it's not just located in Somerset, but Somerset's what we're dealing with here, is having a big effect on house building. The House Builders Federation estimates that it's holding up about 44,000 homes. It's something the government's very much alive to. There are some big changes coming in the Levelling Up and Regeneration Bill, but of course that bill is currently making its way through Parliament. That brings us to the facts of Fry itself. Now, this concerns a large development called Jerston Farm in Somerset. Outline permission was granted in December 2015 for about 650 houses and various other uses. The development was going to take place in phases. We're concerned with phase three of eight. Phase three received its reserve matters approval, subject to a number of pre-commencement conditions in June 2020. And those conditions included things like tree protection measures, surface water drainage, etc. The Natural England advice note was issued after that in August 2020, and the claimant sought discharge of his conditions in 2021. Now, the council said it couldn't discharge them until it had undertaken an appropriate assessment. It had seen Natural England's advice note. Obviously, no appropriate assessment had been undertaken prior to August 2020, i.e. either at outline phase or at reserve matters phase, and the council's position was, no, we have to do that now. The claimant, understandably, was frustrated by this, particularly given that some of the conditions it wanted discharged, like tree protection, arguably didn't relate to nutrient neutrality at all. So the claimant appealed to an inspector, arguing that no appropriate assessment was required at condition discharge stage, or if it was, it should be confined to the conditions in issue. So, for example, if the inspector was looking at discharging the tree protection condition, he should only look at tree protection matters, and that obviously doesn't import nutrient neutrality concerns. Somerset Council resisted that, said the inspector needed to take an appropriate assessment of the whole project. The council submitted its own appropriate assessment, stating the development might have an adverse effect on the integrity of the Ramsar site through phosphorus. And as no mitigation was proposed, that couldn't be ruled out. The claimant didn't bother putting in its own scientific evidence. It simply made arguments on principle that it shouldn't have to. The inspector sided with Somerset Council dismissing the appeal. And that brings us to this High Court case. Now, the claimant had three grounds of appeal, which it put before Sir Ross Cranston, and I'll come to each of those in turn. But in broad outline, they are, first, that an appropriate assessment doesn't apply to condition discharge stage at all. It bites at outline permission stage. Second, if it does apply, discharge stage, that is for SACs and SPAs, i.e. those protected by the habitats regulations, it cannot apply, the need for an appropriate assessment cannot apply as a matter of law to Ramsar sites because those are protected by policy only. Third, even if the requirement for an appropriate assessment does apply to Ramsar sites and in condition discharge stage, then the scope of considerations at condition discharge stage is limited to the conditions in issue. As I said, if you're discharging trees, you only worry about tree things. The judge rejected all of these grounds, and I want to try and avoid getting too technical, but it's important to understand why, to understand the bigger implications of Fry. So I'll start with ground one, which was the biggie. Ground one turns on the interpretation of Regulation 70 of the Habitats Regulations, and in particular, Regulation 70 Subregulation 1 and Section 70 Subregulation 3. Subregulation 3 in particular refers to outline planning permissions and makes clear that an appropriate assessment can be undertaken at outline permission stage. The judge agreed with the claimant that looking at a strict textual reading of the regulations, they might only require assessment when a permission is granted. So for a full permission, when the permission is granted, or in a multi-stage consent, i.e. outline permission, reserve matters and condition discharge at outline stage. However, he considered that on a true interpretation of the regulations, they can apply and require an appropriate assessment at these subsequent stages, reserve matters or condition discharge. And he based this on three things. First, Article 6.3 of the Habitats Directive itself. Second, a purposive interpretation of the regulations. And third, existing case law. So the first of these was Article 6.3 of the Habitats Directive itself. That requires an appropriate assessment to be undertaken before a project is, and I quote, agreed to. That's the term used in the directive, agreed to. Although we've left the EU, the High Court has previously held in another case, Harrison Environment Agency from last year, that the obligation in Article 6.3 has direct effect in the UK because of Section 4 of the EU Withdrawal Act. And Section 4 says obligations of a kind recognised by a court as having direct effect pre-Brexit still do. And Harris made clear that Article 6.3 is an obligation of a kind that had been recognised as having direct effect pre-Brexit. Now, the claimant attempted to distinguish that, and effectively by saying there's no pre-existing case law on this exact point, i.e. Do you need a appropriate assessment at condition stage? And by saying that Article 6.3 doesn't say when an assessment has to take place, just that it has to. And the judge rejected both those points. He basically reiterated that Harris already has held Article 6.3 has direct effect. And the claimant's suggestions that any EU law cases have to be exactly on point, i.e. exactly on the question we're deciding, is wrong, as Section 4 of the Withdrawal Act makes clear. So Article 6.3 requires an assessment before a project is agreed to. And in this case, pre-commencement conditions as a matter of domestic law need to be discharged before a project can lawfully commence. So that is part of a project being agreed to. So that was his first point, Article 6.3. His second strand of reasoning was a purposive interpretation of the regs. Now, it's well established that the Habitats regulations need to be construed purposively. Look at the Wyatt case in the Court of Appeal last year. And the purpose of those regulations, it's well established, is to stop harm occurring. In a multi-stage consent, the consent, therefore, what's agreed to is what's no, the shorthand that's been used is the implementing decision. And there are two High Court cases on that, Wingfield in 2019 and Swire in 2022. And here, the judge held that the decision to discharge conditions was that implementing decision. The judge considered and dismissed arguments otherwise by the claimant, and I want to mention two. The first is that the claimant had argued that because the Habitats regulations require an assessment at outline stage, there's no lacuna on the claimant's interpretation. The judge dismissed that. It's obviously wrong. This is a case in point where there would be a lacuna because a permission has got outline permission and consent, and on the claimant's interpretation would therefore proceed to be built out and do harm without an appropriate assessment being undertaken. Second, the claimant said that it's well established in domestic law that a reserve matters approval is not a planning permission because you have to read the Habitats regulations with the Town and Country Planning Act, and in Fulford Parish Council, a 2019 Court of Appeal case, the court made clear that a reserve matters approval is not in fact a planning permission. Again, the court rejected this, concluding that on a close reading of the judgment in Fulford Parish Council, the conclusion was driven by the particular statutory context there, and the same does not apply here. Regulation 70, sub-regulation 3, as I've said, the regulation that requires an assessment at outline stage can be read as requiring an assessment at that stage in circumstances where one might otherwise argue that it's too early to have an assessment. In short, regulation 70 sub-regulation 3 is an extending provision, not a limiting one. The third strand of the judge's reasoning is pre-existing case law, and all of this was case law that came down before the cutoff from Brexit, what's called the IP completion date, apart from a 2022 case called Swire, which is post that date. So the three strands to the case law are this. First, there is CJEU case law and domestic House of Lords authority on multi-stage consents in EIA, Environmental Impact Assessment. That establishes that in a multi-stage consent, if you don't do an EIA outline stage, you do need to do one later on before consent is given. And that's a famous House of Lords case called Barker from 2006. Second, there is CJEU case law, again pre-Brexit, which says the interpretation of the EIA directive is directly relevant to what is meant to give consent in the Habitats Directive. Third, there is domestic case law, both pre- and post-Brexit. Wingfield is pre-Brexit, Swire is post-Brexit, in the High Court level, applying those strands of CJEU case law and effectively saying that if a proper appropriate assessment hasn't been done at outline stage, it can be done at reserved matters stage. And the claimant tried to distinguish all of those, effectively reiterating the points that I've suggested above, i.e. that none of these cases deal with the precise legal issue here, which is whether an appropriate assessment has to be done at condition discharge stage. And the judge rejected that as a point of distinction. The claimant also argued that, in effect, requiring an appropriate assessment at reserve matters or condition discharge stage would undermine the validity of planning permissions already granted. He said you can't do that and relied on well-known case law, such as the Proberon case. The judge considered this was no answer to the point. A, if there is a conflict between domestic and EU law or EU-derived law, at the moment, EU-derived law wins. That's the effect of Section 5 of the Withdrawal Act. The supremacy of EU law applies to things made before IP completion day insofar as they haven't been modified. And of course, the Habitats Directive hasn't been so modified, not yet. In any event, the judge said the permission is still valid. what the authority and the Secretary of State is doing is refusing to discharge conditions. Now, that doesn't invalidate the permission granted. It's a, you can't move forward. It's not a, we're going to go backwards. So on ground one, the court effectively said, yes, Habitat's regulations require an appropriate assessment at condition discharge stage. Ground two of the claimant, as I've said, was that effectively that even if that's right, it doesn't apply in this case because what we're dealing with is a Ramsar site that's protected by policy. Nutrient neutrality would be legally irrelevant to some of the considerations such as tree conditions, and therefore policy is making, trying to make relevant what is otherwise legally irrelevant, and that's what you can't do. The claimant relied on a Supreme Court case called ELSIC. Now, ELSIC was a case where a local authority's SPD required highways contributions, irrespective of whether a development would actually cause an impact. And the Supreme Court rejected that on the basis that a planning permission cannot be bought or sold. However, that argument wasn't applicable in this case. There was going to be an impact on the Somerset Levels, the judge said. That cannot be said. The impact cannot be said to be legally irrelevant to the discharge of conditions. Shadow HRA showed the project would cause harm. And therefore, to understand the scope of the discharge of conditions, one needed to consider the legal consequences. One of those was the harm. It was also the fact that there was going to be an impact on the Ramsar site against the national policy imperative. So the judge said that it was legally relevant. Ground two was therefore rejected. Ground three was the claimant's fallback argument, which is, okay, well, if you have to have an appropriate assessment at condition discharge stage, and if that applies to Ramsar sites, then the scope of that assessment should be limited to the conditions discharged, i.e. if you're discharging a tree condition, you only consider tree things. And again, the judge rejected that. Regulation 63 and the Habitats Directive requires an assessment of the project to be undertaken. Where a stage is granting authorization for a development for a project, it is that development which must be assessed. So again, ground three was rejected. Where does this leave us? Well, as I've said above, this is not the last word on this particular issue. So stay tuned. But some key takeaways from this judgment where we stand now. First, on the interpretation and relevance of EU case law and EU obligations, this is a helpful reminder for legal practitioners that direct effect obligations and relevant CJU cases don't need to be specifically on the only instant question in issue in order to be relevant. They can be relevant if they bear on the question, but it does not have to answer the specific question that a claimant wants the court to decide in order to be relevant and considered. For those in the development system, the key takeaways are these. First, if a project hasn't had an appropriate assessment at any point, it needs one before conditions can be discharged, pre-commencement conditions, I should say. That is an appropriate assessment of everything that the condition would in effect let through the gate. The conditions here we're going to let through the development, so that's what needs to be reviewed. It's not simply limited to what is the condition concerned with. Third, and I mention this because I'm hearing this through clients, it's important to understand that this is a do not move forward provision. It's not a, oh, now we're going to revisit all of the planning permissions and reserve matters approvals that you've got. So do not move forward, sure, but it's not a, we can now move backwards. If a local authority wants to start doing things like imposing additional conditions or revoking permissions, then there are specifically statutory routes they have to take that involve awarding things like compensation. Fourth is how this interacts with incoming legislative changes. Now, I've seen some suggestion that this is going to be a problem on the LERB. That's going to have to be considered quite carefully, but a lot of the Withdrawal Act changes, a lot of the Withdrawal Act's copying across of the pre-existing EU law book, which was its express intention, apply insofar as legislative provisions are not modified on or after exit day. Now, the LERB, to the extent it makes any changes to the Habitats regulations or introduces changes dealing with nutrient neutrality, obviously is a post-IP completion day change. So I don't think it's as clear cut necessarily as Fry is a problem for the LERB, but that's for legislators to pick up. The second question that I get asked is how this interacts with the Retention of EU Law Act. Now, that does introduce some fairly fundamental changes to the current withdrawal position, including repealing Section 4 of the Withdrawal Act, which, of course, is what underpins Harris, and making EU law, if there's a divergence between EU-derived law and pure domestic law, it requires EU law to be read consistently with domestic law, not the other way around. That comes into effect from January. And again, it would seem to have some significant implications, potentially, for at least the reasoning of the High Court in the Fry case. As I haven't thought about either of them in detail, I'll go no further than to say these are things on the horizon which will need to be considered, rather than to offer any sort of opinion on whether they are going to fundamentally change the landscape. So that's it from me. I hope that's been helpful. Back to you, Meeta.